When you've got that kind of iconic type of thing, and it's going to be hard to replicate, and of course it's going to be weird to see 5-0 thrust into the modern age here with all the gadgetry and everything else that's really sure to be a part of it as well. When is that supposed to be on the lineup, Simon?
I believe it's going to be a Sunday night show. Monday night at 10 o'clock.
It's
going to replace CSI Miami, which goes to Sunday night at the same time. So CSI Miami, which has been in a free fall in the ratings of late on Monday night, is going one night early at 10 o'clock, and Hawaii 5-0 will be on after the comedy lineup at 10 on Monday.
Okay.
I should point out that Jack Lord, the iconic Steve McGarrett, grew up in Richmond Hill, Queens. So since you played Dancing Queen, Honor of Queens, I just figured I'd throw that out there. And Scott Kahn, the son of James Kahn, grew up in Sunnyside. Actually, James Kahn is from Sunnyside. So there's still a Queens connection here to Hawaii 5-0.
All right.
And one thing I wonder, Rick and Lloyd, is whether they're going to have the great Morton Stevens theme music, which, by the way, was playing ad infinitum in so many versions when the CBS upfront ended. And also, will they have a great title sequence the way that the wonderful Rezé Bedai, who just celebrated his 80th birthday and was honored by UCLA recently for his great directing and title work, will they do that? I mean, this is the age where we don't see title sequences on broadcast television. I hope that CBS makes an exception here.
They may very well, just because, again, the template for the show is so utterly memorable. I'm thinking maybe like a techno remix or something like that. I don't think it'll be the original, but it'll be some modern take on that, don't you think?
I think you're right. I'm a Ventures purist for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And I'm the original Morton Stevens arrangement.
There you go.
Yeah, that would, you know, again, it's etched so very memorably into our minds. But with the shows that are coming out in the fall, let me just start by keeping it generic here and seeing what you guys have got on this. I'll start with you, Lloyd. What are some of the new programs that are jumping out at you the most, for better or for worse?
You know, which is funny. Well, for worse, there are a couple of. Let me predict. I think the first cancellation of the season is Raising Hope on Fox. This was an absolute turkey about a young slacker who suddenly finds himself being a dad. A very un-Fox-like show, just absolutely god awful. There's a mid-season replacement on the CW called Shedding for the Wedding. I kid you not. It's from the producer of The Biggest Loser, and so we're gonna have couples who are overweight competing to lose weight to get the wedding of their dreams. Absolutely god-awful. There was such derisive laughter when I was presented. I thought Don Osterhoff, the president of the CW Entertainment, was going to start crying. I'd never seen that before.
You never saw anybody get laughed off the stage at one of those things.
That was, yeah. And I kind of felt for her. I like Don. She's a lovely lady, but that was just a bad moment. The couple of things that hit me is very favorable. I'm sure Simon's going to talk about Nikita on the CW with Maggie Q, kind of an action.
You bet. I'll let you talk about it first, though.
I know that I think derived from Femme Nikita from USA Network, and Simon's more of an expert on that than I am. The one I enjoyed was Ally Muchalka as in Hellcats, a nice show about cheerleading. Ally, I don't know if she was in the film Bandmates, a very attractive and talented actress. And this is going to really get a lot of attention because it really highlights cheerleading as a very sport, a very dangerous sport at that. So I was impressed with that, surprisingly, coming from the CW. That was a good one. I liked also on the Fox Network, Running Wild with Will Arnett, a very talented comedian, looked like that had possibilities. So that kind of jumped at me. And I think a couple I may have just come. I'll wait for Simon to kind of give his list. I'll probably jump on that.
Okay. Yeah, Simon, what have you got?
Well, two general things. The thing I was impressed the most by was diversity. It looks like the broadcast networks have finally gotten the wake-up call, like the cable networks did several years ago, and finally realized we are running headlong toward a multicultural majority in this country, and we have to have diversity in front and behind the camera. Most of the new shows that were on had diverse casts, and in the case of some shows like Undercovers on NBC and Nikita with Maggie Q, who may be the first Asian-American actress to headline her own drama series in the history of television, really great breakthroughs. And there's more breakthroughs to come, including the Criminal Minds spinoff with Forrest Whitaker. The thing that didn't impress me generally was overabundance of cop shows, overabundance of lawyer shows, overabundance of medical shows, all with twists. What the broadcast networks keep forgetting is the old adage, variety is the spice of life. That's why Dancing with the Stars and American Idol and Glee are among the top shows, because they're different. And that's what really hit me, was the shows that were truly different. I think ABC has two of them in My Generation. It's a program that could be a genre buster. It mixes drama, documentary, tied to real life events. The other is No Ordinary People. Some people might think of it as The Incredibles, the Pixar animated classic in real life, but it has a fair good cast, and when it's headed by Michael Chiklis, who comes off a great performance in The Shield, is definitely worth watching. On NBC, I think the event could be interesting. It deals with an ordinary person caught up in one of the great political conspiracies, maybe the greatest of all time. That's going to follow Chuck, whose fortunes on NBC continue to be puzzling. That show should be off the air. It's gotten 3 years to make it. It's a bomb. It's Monday night's episode and the Monday night before, which is when NBC announced the schedule, 5 share of audience. How you can lead a night with a 5 share of audience program that should have been canceled in the second season, much less been given a third, is crazy. CBS, nothing of merit. I think the one that was close is Mike and Molly, a show about two likable people who belong to Overeaters Anonymous. The actors are likable. I'm not sure whether this plot can stay on over time. What really hit me about CBS, gentlemen, was the scheduling. The shows didn't look distinctive, but the scheduling certainly is. With Big Bang Theory moving to Thursday night, I think they've got a great chance to make it. The CSI situation, as I mentioned before, and a couple of other scheduling changes, and Survivor going from Thursday nights, where it's barely held its time period, to Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. And then on CW, Nikita, the remake of La Femme Nikita. The thing that really hits me about this program, at least from the clips I saw, La Femme Nikita on USA was a very haunting, enigmatic program. You were on the edge of your seat because the characters could turn on a second. And I think the producers and the creators of this new remake with Maggie Q have got that. If they do, the show will work. If they don't, this will be another spy drama with no distinction. But I think Maggie Q can pull it off. She's a terrific actress. And also, I think she gave one of the best impromptu performances at any upfront this last week. I thought what she said at the CW upfront was dynamite. One of the few people didn't use a teleprompter, and she was just charming.
Okay. Well, it made that that strong of an impression on you, huh? So is that something where you see it as a potential star-making franchise then for the network with that program?
I do. I also agree with Lloyd on Hellcats. In addition to Allie, who he mentioned, there's also Ashley Tisdale, who's done several Disney Channel shows, also on High School Musical, the High School Musical films. I think she's terrific. Supporting cast is also good. The interesting thing is going to be how the plots thicken over the course of time. And on Fox, I think a show to watch that I've heard some advertising people be interested in is Lone Star. At first, it comes across like a soap opera, but when you have Amy Littman, who did a wonderful job with Party of Five, producing it, it may be a little more substantial than that. And speaking of Running Wild, it's a show that's produced by Joe and Anthony Russo, the brother-brother team that put on Arrested Development and also now has Community on NBC. Joe was on our show Tomorrow We Televised last Friday, and he ended up the big winner in this. He had 3 shows, 2 new shows plus Community. I don't know how long Community is going to last because that's up against Big Bang Theory, and it may drop dead very soon, and that will, I think, cause havoc with NBC's already tough comedy lineup. But he does have Running Wild on Fox, which starts this fall, and then a new show for ABC called Happy Endings, which premieres in mid-season. So he's one of the big winners.
Just jump in. Simon's right about diversity. I mean, I used to joke the CW used to stand for completely white, and those days are now long behind, so I'm glad that they've gotten into the 21st century. Mike and Molly, I agree also with Simon. Pleasant cast. This is a case of politics, though. Chuck Lorre, who is the brains behind 2 and a Half Men and The Big Bang Theory, this is what happens. CBS owed him a favor, and I think Mike and Molly is the favor. One show I'm kind of curious, let me just talk about Lone Star before I get to ask Simon about another show. Lone Star is kind of like Dallas 30 years later, a lot of double-crossing. James Woke, a very handsome guy. I could see where that could create a buzz. Simon, I was curious what you thought of Chase on NBC. That also is kind of like Maggie Q, a female U.S. Marshal, chop socky kind of an over-empowered woman. I was kind of curious what you thought of that one.
Well, given the pedigree of Jerry Bruckheimer, who has so many shows on the air, it's tough to keep count. It could do well. It's up against the Y5O, and we'll see how then. It's up against Castle, which is gaining a lot of strength after Dancing with the Stars now on ABC. So this could be a show that could go any which way. And again, it depends on the lead-in of the event and then the lead-in of Chuck. One show on NBC I think could be a sleeper is School Pride. It's a new reality show. NBC did not have a lot to say about it at the upfront event, but it's a show about a group of people who deal with Japanese schools and the process transform lives and transform school districts. If this is well handled, this could be a really, really good show.
Hey, guys.
And I'm surprised that this kind of program was not highlighted enough by NBC.
I tell you what, guys, we actually have a very nice surprise here. This panel is about to get joined by another one here. Prestigious gentleman coming in to join us here for this segment. Believe this or not, guys, giving us a call right now. We're going to him on line four, Senior Vice President for Communications at the CW, Mr. Paul McGuire, joining us here. Paul, good to have you on. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. I guess you may have some things to respond to. Some of the CW shows have been critiqued thus far a bit by Simon and Lloyd.
I've been listening avidly to my good friend Lloyd and Simon, two of the finest critics in the business, and I've been enjoying the CW props for Nikita. Absolutely, as you said, Simon, one of the greatest spontaneous moments in upfront patter history. And Ally Machalka certainly made an impression when she walked on stage, so I just wanted to thank you guys for that.
There you go, and I think those shows do have the goods.
I do. I would again, however, Lloyd, chide you for using the adjective derisive to describe the laughter that enveloped shedding for the wedding.
Well, we'll
I don't know how you
down.
Can call laugh, how you can characterize the tonal laughter of 3,000 people in a room at the Madison Square Garden Theater. Perhaps you are more prescient and psychic than I am.
All right, Paul.
And I
promise that I will watch when that comes on the air.
That's all right. And as far as the completely white network, I mean, come on, let's give us some props. When we began here, we had Everybody Loves Chris. We had The Game. We had America's Next Top Model. We had quite a bit of diverse representation. However, as Simon said, I do believe it is the first time we've ever had an Asian-American actress leading in a show, and we're very excited about Maggie. She's a doll. Spent some time with her that evening, and, I think, also to answer your point, Simon, I think your note is spot on. I think they know exactly they need to create a series with that kind of edge-of-your-seat excitement, and I think they will. But anyway, I was listening to you guys, so I just thought I would call in and pull your leg a little bit there.
Paul,
while you're on, Paul, I got to give you props for keeping another show on, which got great, which I think is one of your best shows in recent CW history. That's Life Unexpected. For those who haven't seen this program, it is a marvelous show. It deserved a second season, and I'm thrilled that it got it.
Absolutely.
It was on
one of the greatest pilots in recent years, WB Throwback. I thought the quality kept out throughout the year, and Liz Tigelar has got, I think, a great season in mind, pitched out for next year. I think the show will feel a little broader but still have the heart and, humanity and emotion that that you're citing. And I think, we're very proud of that show. Shows, especially on a smaller network like us, you have to give, the flowers time to grow. You have to be patient. And I think we do have a winner in that show. And I thank you.
I should point out one of my favorite all-time shows was on the WB pre-CW do-over. I'm still waiting for that to make a comeback.
Oh, starring Penn Badgley of Gossip
Penn
Girl.
Penn Badgley
fame.
Went on to Gossip Girl, and maybe that's why I made my CW, because I thought of that show.
No, that's right. Executive producer Warren Littlefield. I'll give you a little inside information. Inside, we referred to that show as Duver, Lloyd.
Okay, gotcha.
Anyway, I'll leave you guys. Enjoy the show. Enjoy your critiques. Have a nice afternoon.
Thanks for calling. It means a lot to us.
My pleasure.
All the best, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul. And your call's going in a promo, I have to tell you, when you call these guys out here. It's going in a promo. Thank you so much.
Oh, please, have Cervello send it to me. I'd love to hear that.
We'll do that. And I'll tell
all
you
right,
what,
guys,
Paul.
Have a great
day. Thank you, Paul.
Please don't be a stranger, Paul. We'd love to have you back in your own right. All right, Paul McGuire. From the CW, that certainly was unexpected, guys. We didn't have that on the thing here for tonight, but evidently, the thought of hearing about derisive laughter for one of his shows was just a bridge too far for the man. So,
wait till you see Shedding for the Wedding, and I'll let you make the call on that. That won't be until mid-season, though. Simon, what do you think? Was it derisive or not? You were there.
I think the title caught people off guard. Not the premise of the show, but the title. It rhymes in a crazy way. And ironically, Univision has a similar show coming on in their fall season, and they had no derisive laughter derisive or otherwise. I think it was the way it came out that got the laugh, like, oh, ha, ha, ha. But we'll see again. We'll see what happens. Either the title will be it's a working title, by the way. So there's a good chance the title may change, if not the show. But we'll see what happens, and it'll give the CW certainly the willpower to make something happen.
Well, I got to give Paul McGuire credit. He is really one of the good guys in television.
Yeah.
He doesn't take himself too seriously, and he values all media. So he really is a great guy in this business.
Yeah, you know, what a good sport to give us a call here. Let me ask you, Lloyd, you know, before we move on from this, in terms of definitions here, instead of derisive laughter, was it perhaps nervous, uncomfortable laughter? I'm asking the right guy because
I
understand.
Well be. I think what it is, you know, it's funny, we're talking about Mike and Molly, the opposite, where actually it's nice to see a show that has two overweight people as leads. And I just think that after The Biggest Loser and all these reality shows, that it just rubbed people the wrong way. There was something kind of, I have to say this, and hopefully Paul won't call me back on this, but I think there was something kind of tasteless about this. On the other hand, there's a very good summer replacement show that CW is coming up with, and it's funny, the title slips me about people trying to contact their crushes and trying to do makeovers. Do you remember the show, Simon, the title of that that's going to be on the CW this summer?
Plain Jane, Lloyd.
Plain Jane. Absolutely. There's a show that really has a lot of heart and humanity where we can all agree that girl in high school where we may have thought we were the dorks, and now we get a chance to, kind of a makeover show, but something that we can relate to. I thought that's a very nice show with heart. So I'm not here to pick on reality or pick on the CW, but I loved Plain Jane, hated Shedding for the Wedding.
Well, Lloyd, and I didn't even make it to the punchline. I was going to ask you, you know, I understand that you're the master of eliciting through your questions at press conferences nervous, uncomfortable laughter. Is it possible that's what that
I
was?
I have been known for that. hopefully I'll be speaking to Ms. Rima Faki tomorrow at Citi Field, Miss USA. I'm going to ask her about it. Apparently she has relatives who are very big members of Hezbollah. That should get a lot of nervous laughter tomorrow.
And Rick, incidentally, to go over some of the upfronts we didn't cover yet, I thought Turner's upfront was dynamite. Conan O'Brien was wonderful. TNT's got some new shows in the fire. One is premiering next month called Memphis Beat, co-executive produced in part by George Clooney. I think Jason Lee from My Name Is Earl fame is terrific, and I think the Memphis scenery and the music is going to make this show. And then next year, TNT had some clips of the new show they're doing with Steven Spielberg called Fallen Skies. It's an alien invasion drama. Noah Wiley is in the lead, got a very good cast. I think the show looks great. The pilot was written by Robert Rodat, who did the screenplay and should have won the Oscar for Saving Private Ryan. And if Rodat stays with the show, I think this is going to be a winner. And TBS has also got some good shows in the fire, including Neighbors from Hell, the new animated show that premieres in a couple weeks.
Simon, what do you think of Glory Days? It was kind of like the popularity of Hot Tub Time Machine. It looked like it was taken from that. And guys going back to 1986 college. I thought that looked like a lot of fun.
I did too. It seemed like a very likable cast. Love to see what they do with the premise. Had some good production talent behind it. I think it could win pretty well.
Well,
and also, we should also include an update. TNT is not going to do Law & Order. So Dick Wolf is not going to get his 21st record-breaking season on that network. TNT informed the Los Angeles Times today, no deal, we're not talking, and there's not going to be a record 21st season on TNT.
Okay.
So Dick has got to look for someplace else to go to get that season.
Interesting, yeah. And you wonder who else has got the kind of pockets out there to be able to afford that. Something that the aforementioned Steve Cervillo just IM'd about here. You guys just mentioned in the course of a couple of the upfronts here and passing the CBS upfront, the term, as I guess it's going to be known for broadcast TV, of Bleep My Dad Says, with William Shatner here playing the role of the aforementioned dad. Talk about that one here. It certainly is a very quirky project for his return to network TV.
I don't see it, you know, to be very honest. Aside from the title, that got more buzz than the actual premise itself. Simon, what do you think?
I think William Shatner can do comedy, but it may get a fair audience, given the fact it's going to follow Big Bang Theory on Thursday nights at 8:30, but there's got to be more to prove.
I don't see this as a... They do well initially because of what you just pointed out in the scheduling. I don't see it as a keeper.
Oh, so it's going head-to-head with my show, The Office, then. So that's okay. Well, that's going to be kind of brutal right there to begin with, don't you think?
Well, this is the last year for Steve Carell. We'll see how that plays out.
That's true. Now, speaking of Thursday night...
I'll tell you, Rick, one of the big fallacies in broadcast television is that NBC's comedy lineup is a success. It is not. It is a third-place comedy lineup, even with 30 Rock and The Office. The only reason why both shows are... And, I mean, 30 Rock is a fantastic show, don't get me wrong, same as The Office in terms of creative, and, of course, winning Emmys all over the place. But the problem is it's never had a big audience. It gets by because of the 1849, but in terms of actual audience, it is usually a third or fourth place situation in its time period. And I think this could be the end of both The Office and 30 Rock. 30 Rock did not have a good creative year this past season, and I think Community is not going to help if Big Bang takes off on Thursday night. That's the key.
Okay.
Big Bang takes off. I think you see the end of the line for Community, Office, and 30 Rock.
Well, and Parks and Rec is coming back as a mid-season replacement here, which it was gaining a lot of critical traction through the year, a tremendous amount. But again, the ratings bounce didn't seem to be going along with that. Let me ask you guys about this in the sense that let's talk about The Office here for a second, which, you know, I could talk about 24/7. But it's really interesting, Simon, because what you said is true in the traditional broadcast business model sense. But in terms of the big picture of what The Office brings in, iTunes, DVDs, tchotchkes that they're selling online, everything like that. Is it, in a sense, is it too optimistic for me to say that it's redefining what it means to be a hit show? Because it's got all these other revenue streams that make up for what are admittedly, mediocre Nielsen numbers. Or does the bottom line still hold in a situation like that?
No, Rick, you hit it on the head. The reason why that show continues, why My Name is Earl had a long run, why Family Guy came back, is because of other revenue streams, and also the fact that cable got into the case. Mm-hmm. In the case of Family Guy, for example, it was Cartoon Network that got the reruns, saved the show, and made Fox decide to make new ones. Futurama, by the way, same course, coming up in a few weeks on Comedy Central. Office, the reruns on TBS, saved the show. Along with the DVDs. 30 Rock, different case. It got off the bat with the critics, and that's why NBC kept it going. But yeah, if it's the right show, the combination of the original run, the DVR, and the DVD, and a cable run alongside it might keep a show going.
Okay. Interesting. So these are things to be looking forward to as we go along. Let me segue into this. I guess we'll probably get back to the upfronts, but this seems like a natural place to segue. And I'll start with you on this, Simon, because this is something we've talked about previously on the show, probably every time we've had you on, and that's the nature of where this is going with the technology, the evolution of it, and it always seems to be a topic between us here. You know, when are we going to start to get to that point of connectivity, the crossover between television and the internet? To look at the headlines from the last week anyways, at least the surface analysis, this Google TV venture looks like it's going to take us closer than anything we've ever had before on a mass scale. Now, you've said previously on the show there are places, there are cable systems that have done pilot versions, say, of Hulu being available on there and stuff. But really, anybody now with Google TV is going to be able to access any of that stuff. And oh, by the way, shows like ours on Sports Talk Network work while you're at it, on their TV set, you know, Hulu, YouTube, the entire universe available. Is this really the beginning of that mass crossover between the two, do you think?
We are going to find out over the next 12 months, Rick and Lloyd, because I think the Google TV announcement last Thursday was the big story, or the potential big story, not only of this year, but maybe of this decade and beyond. Google is headlong into this. They've got major backers behind them in Intel, in Best Buy, in Sony, in Logitech, and in Dish Network. And that is a big thing to watch, because Dish Network gives Google a potential audience, Google TV, of 13 to 14 million homes. The thing to keep in mind about this project is this is both for TV sets and for set-top boxes. We're talking about an interactive TV platform that can take all kinds of services, web and beyond web. And that set-top box can be connected. That's the key word, can be connected to your digital cable or satellite box. So if Dish Network can make this work as an add-on to their set-top infrastructure, to their subscribers, the subscribers get a liking to this. Every cable operator, DirecTV, Fios, UVerse, had better pay attention, because they're going to get on. We're going to see a bandwagon, and if we see a bandwagon, we're finally going to find out whether interactive television makes it to the public. I asked Charlie Rose at the TechCrunch Dispute Conference. It's a conference that took place here in New York the last few days. Marvelous conference, by the way, by TechCrunch, the leading technology blog. Charlie Rose asked John Doerr, who is an investor in Google through his VC firm, Kleiner Perkins. He said, Google TV will do what for me? And he said on the line, he thinks that this is the best handling of the internet and television, and Google TV will do it. We will find out if his words are true over the next year.
Well, let me ask you this, too, because perhaps this is on the mind. I got a follow-up for you. This is probably on the mind of people that are listening to us right now. Among the different entities that you mentioned in there, with Sony. If I'm not mistaken, they're the ones that are behind the 3D project right now, too. Is it possible that these things may be at cross purposes or that there may be some cooperation? You're going to have some sets equipped for 3D, some sets equipped for Google TV. I don't know. Maybe there'll be some of them for both. I don't know. What are you hearing about that? And are these two big strands likely to be competitors with one another that might cannibalize each other or setting up for a cooperative thing where all these technologies will get merged into the new TVs?
Well, you certainly want to give consumers variety. If people want 3D and not HD, not 3D, you got to have sets to do that. But I think it would be company suicide if Sony did not have at least one television model that had it all: 3D, HD, and Google TV, and the ability to take other interactive TV services, the likes of a Yahoo Intel widget channel, the likes of another internet app store, and so on. The good thing for Sony is that they also can make the set-top box. They did that with Cablevision Systems when they rolled out their digital cable process early on. Then Cablevision made the switch to Scientific Atlanta, later Cisco Systems, with their set-tops. So Sony does have expertise in the set-top field as well as the TV set field, and they can certainly leverage that. I think this is a fascinating project because
ESPN up front, but ESPN is making a very big bet on 3D. I think they may even experiment with the World Cup on that, obviously on a very limited basis. But I know that they made it very clear they're betting big on 3D.
Everybody else, every TV set maker, Lloyd, is betting big on this. It's not just ESPN is betting big. They'll be the first television network to do it, but DirecTV's got a three-channel service. There's another two-channel video-on-demand service coming this fall. And don't forget Discovery with Sony and IMAX, which moved up their timetable for a 3D network from next summer to this fall.
Yeah.
So we're going to get the first test whether 3D is going to make it with the American public.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to read too much into it, because we may have some fits and starts, but this will certainly be the first big test.
Absolutely.
It's funny, I'm going to take a pessimistic view here. I think this could be like the old quad stereo was in the 70s. A lot of talk, but when push came to shove, the public didn't buy it.
Oh, interesting. So this is like the 8-track tape to you, then.
I could see with all the gizmos, I always thought that the 3D technology has been in the movies for years, and yet it really, recently it's gotten big with the IMAX, but I think it's a limited appeal. That's just, again, my gut feel. I could prove to be wrong on this one.
Interesting.
Yeah, but Lloyd has a point, Rick, and I think we mentioned it the last time I was on your program, which is this. You have to educate the public in how 3D works, and ultimately the carriers of 3D, the programmers, all the set makers, have to get across this point to the public. This is as valuable as high definition. You made high definition a mass medium because you saw that any genre of programming could work with HD, whether it's Discovery Channel's Life, whether it's ESPN, whether it's USA Network's Dramas, or The Price is Right on CBS. That's when you saw HD sales, set sales, and subscriptions by cable and satellite take off. Now we have half the American public with HD sets. That's what I think has to happen with 3D. The public has to get in their mind the impression that this works with any kind of programming as equally valuable, with or without the glasses. If that does not get home with the public, 3D will fail.
That's the problem. I don't think it's late at night you want to put on your dorky glasses to watch 3D. That's a very big issue. It sounds humorous, but I do believe that could be a deal killer.
Yeah, just in talking to a handful of people, that's something that I've heard as raised as a concern, Simon, is that we tend to associate this as, okay, we're going to the theater, and I've mentioned it, you know, like I said last year, I went to go see My Bloody Valentine 3D, loved it in 3D, it was awesome, one of the greatest things I've ever seen, but I don't know if I want to wear them glasses all the time, and I think that could that not be a psychological barrier there, Simon? These are things you think of, like, okay, I'm going to go watch this for a couple of hours. The thought of constantly having them on in one's home, having to watch TV that way, I don't know. Isn't that something that's, I'm not going to say a deal breaker, but certainly a barrier to this thing getting further?
It could, and the other thing is the content has to be good.
Yeah.
You know, World Cup is a given. You know ESPN's going to give it the full treatment of coverage. But the question is, Discovery and Sony and IMAX are going to bring their smarts to the table. The question is, can other people do the same thing?
Right.
Going back to Google TV for a second, same thing with content. If people find that on Google TV they can do more than just search, if they can get some really unique interactive applications that make a difference in their lives, it will work. And the beauty of Google TV is this is an open source system so that anybody, a website, an iPhone app, an iPad app, an Android app, of which there are 50,000 plus, and about 150,000, almost 200,000 iPhone apps, 2,000 iPad apps, or anybody outside can create a application. And Google wants to do that. They want to create the infrastructure for anybody to show up and come up with a great application. And again, the content's going to determine whether the audiences turn on to this.
Well, yeah, everything's going to have to be geared in that kind of a way. What sense do both of you guys have of the pent-up demand for things like the ability to watch YouTube on there? The sense that with Hulu being on TVs, essentially you've got to a large extent TV on demand that way. You know, even other sites like TV.com where you can watch, to throw the example from before, Hawaii 5.0, you can watch a bunch of old episodes from there. The fact that it's really like the first major crossover into TV on demand territory here, in that kind of a way, to what extent do you guys think that that's going to drive the consumer demand for, oh, I got to get Google TV, I want to be able to merge my internet and TV experiences?
You know, it's funny. Again, maybe I'm old school here, but I believe that people tend to compartmentalize things. And I do believe that when you think about YouTube, you tend to think of your computer. And when you think about watching television shows, I mean, it's one thing to, if you miss a show, fine. You know, as a secondary way, you may go to your computer and see something that way. But I think if you have your first choice, you'd rather see it on television. That's kind of what I think was said really at the upfront, and I tend to go with the execs on this one.
Okay, what do you think, Simon?
I think YouTube is the best video-on-demand service that's not video-on-demand, and that's because YouTube is taking, until now, very tentative steps. I am surprised they have not gone full blast into this, because they have so much good content. For example, they have a great collection of classic film and TV, classic TV clips from the 1950s and 60s that are so valuable and rarely seen on television. I mean, Gunsmoke episodes, Have Gun Will Travel. They could do a Western channel that I think a lot of cable operators and DirecTV and Dish would take. We now know that Fios TV has been running YouTube for several weeks now. They got 25,000 hits the first week with not a lot of publicity. And by the way, Fios is running ads here in New York and around the country, which stress YouTube. But I'm really amazed that Google has not pressed the case for this. I think this is a sleeper. You have half the households now with video-on-demand capability, and YouTube has got so much great content, they should really exploit VOD the fullest before somebody else decides to do what YouTube is doing.
Well, I think that's a very good point here. As we start to close here, let's get into the plugs. Lloyd, of course, people can follow you at Queens Chronicle as well as online. And
Good Times Mag, Good yep. Times Magazine, goodtimesmag.com, or qcron.com. So absolutely look forward to having all the Sports Talk Cleveland people catch me online.
Absolutely. I love to have them do that. And Simon, of course, tomorrow will be televised, the blog, the podcast. Talk about how that's available there, and as well as how people can listen to archived versions as well.
We are on Mondays and Fridays at 3 o'clock Eastern, which is noon on the West Coast, on blogtalkradio.com. You have to sign as a listener in order to hear it, but I hope you do. And coming up on our show a week from Friday, we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to do two episodes on the same day. We'll be on a special time of 11 a.m. Eastern. It's 8 a.m. on the West Coast. And joining us will be Glenn Weiss, the Emmy Award-winning producer and director of the Tony Awards, which are on CBS every year. We'll get him during his time off from rehearsals that day. And then later on our regular time period at 3 o'clock, we will have a preview of ESPN 3D with the executive who is overseeing that, Brian Burns. We have Josh Berman, the creator and executive producer of Lifetime sleeper hit of last year, Drop Dead Diva. That comes back on June 6th. And also we will have Adam Yamaguchi, the executive producer of Current Peabody Award-winning news magazine, Vanguard. If you haven't seen Vanguard on Current TV, you're missing one of the best news magazines on the air anywhere. And that's coming up. So those two shows will be coming up a week from Friday. And also coming up next on our show next week, we're going to be off Memorial Day, but we will have on our episode June 1st, that's on Tuesday, 24 hours later, we're going to have the Emmy-winning executives of Cash Cab on Discovery Channel, Tony Tacobari and Allison Korn from Lion TV here in New York, their production company. So you can catch us Monday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, special time on Tuesday, 3 o'clock, and special time on Friday at 11 a.m. You can also catch us on podcast. Soundabite.com has all the details. And if you want to catch us on replay, blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. We've got our column, which will be on Google TV, coming out next week at MediaBizBloggers.com. Thanks
Great.
To the folks at Jack Myers.
I can't wait to see that. I will be clicking on that next week, certainly to read that. And always respect the vast array of diverse entertainment industry and technology industry guests that you have there. We can certainly relate to that with the diversity on this show, guys. Always a pleasure to have you on. We've talked to you both individually before. It was a blast to have you both on here together. I look forward to speaking with you both individually and together in the future.
Rick, it's been a pleasure. Simon, I enjoyed working with you.
Same here. Let's do this again, you newly minted one. Congratulations on the minting.
Fair enough. All right. Send our regards to Neil Best.
All right. We'll do. Yeah, Neil Best coming up on deck here tonight. We don't even slow down. It's going to be a heck of a night. But, guys, I've been looking forward to this all week. I've been talking to Cervillo, telling him I knew it was going to be a lot of fun. Much like Ric Flair back in the days of the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. He could go from territory to territory, and they said he could have a great match, a five-star match with a broomstick. I dare say a broomstick could sit here and have a good, fun conversation with you guys. You made it a lot of fun. Appreciate it. We'll do it again.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thanks,
Lloyd. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Lloyd.
All right. Simon Applebaum, Lloyd Carroll, our good buddies. And, again, you can check out their work at the places they just mentioned.